Hey, Lab Techs, welcome to the Fiction Lab. This is a weekly podcast where I bring in industry experts to talk to you about all things writing fiction, publishing fiction, and the author business of fiction. Yeah, fiction. Fiction Lab. My name is Katrina Schroeder. I am the founder and host of the Fiction Lab. And today's guest is Daphne Singingtree. She joined us to talk about just all the mistakes that she made self-publishing and what you can learn from it. So she's got a couple books out. Second book just came out this June, and so she spends some time telling us about her experience with publishing book one, a lot of the mistakes that she made with self-publishing on that one, and then how book two was a little bit easier because of the things that she learned. But she wanted to share her knowledge so that you don't have to make the same mistakes and save yourself some time and money. So I hope that you enjoy this episode. Awesome. Hey, Daphne. Welcome to the Fiction Lab. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. I really appreciate being here.
Absolutely. Okay, so before we dive into the topic, I know that you were going to talk to us a little bit about some of the mistakes you'd made through self-publishing and how you can help others not make those same mistakes. But before we dive into that, will you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
So I was a midwife for 30 years and an herbal medicine maker. I was also a huge science fiction fan. So I read a lot, but I never thought I could write a novel. I wrote a couple of nonfiction, midwifery and herbal related things, but writing a novel just seemed totally out of a possibility. And then when I retired from my herbal products business, I've retired from midwifery for many, many years, but when I retired from my herbal products business, I had a little bit more time and I spent a lot of time reading. And then this idea for this book hit me and I went on my way.
And here you are. Can you share with us a summary of the book? I have a link, so if anybody wants to purchase it, then they can.
Oh, thank you. The book is about is there is a 30-mile circle in South Dakota, and it includes two Native American reservations, and it takes place in a casino, and the casino is actually having a conference with a bunch of doctors, and this entire 30 miles, including the small towns, all gets transported back in time to 1791, which is before the Louisiana Purchase. Yeah. So all of these people, primarily Native Americans, but also all kinds of other people, get a chance to do a giant do-over to protect the earth and to create their own country. And yeah, so that's what the book is about. And the new, the sequel, Expeditions, just came out in June.
Oh, how exciting. Okay, I did not have that link up, but I'll put up your Eagle Tree Press. Can they purchase it there as well?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So I'll put that QR code on the screen. If you're watching on video, if you're doing podcast, then I'll have all these links in the show notes. That sounds really cool. And
Circle for the Earth is also available on Amazon Unlimited.
Okay, perfect.
On Kindle Unlimited. And they're both available on Amazon.
Perfect. That's so exciting. No, I love your story concept. That sounds so interesting.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So you've made some mistakes and you want to share with us how we cannot make the same mistakes. So please tell us more about that.
Well, I think the first mistake that I made, even though I had read a lot of books, I also really didn't have any concept of how to write fiction. So I got this idea for this book in my head, and that was kind of, I couldn't get it out of my head. So yeah. I just sat and I thought, oh, I should do some research and take some classes on how to write fiction. And I went online and there's lots and lots of wonderful resources. And I just couldn't focus on any of those things. So I decided to just write the book, which was, in hindsight, a big mistake. I wish I would have known all the, you know, because other writers, you know, they give you blueprints and tell you how to do it and give you lots of great instructions. And I didn't do any of those things. Yeah. So I just plowed through and, you know, for 3 months did nothing but sit at my computer and write this book. And I think the second mistake I made is, so I had this draft, which I knew was really rough, mm-hmm. But it was more of a book-shaped blog than a blob than an actual book. It was like, yeah. this concept. But I emailed it out. I was so excited about this. I emailed it to like all kinds of friends and family, anybody that remotely thought might read it.
Yeah,
which was another huge mistake. I should have waited till it went through the editing process multiple times and had like, you know, a set amount of beta readers. The vast majority of people I send it to never got back to me, or maybe started reading it and said, oh, this is terrible, didn't want to tell me. So I didn't get any actionable feedback from other than one or two super close friends. And that was probably the first mistake, was sending out before it was really ready for even a beta reader, sending out way too early copies.
Yeah.
So that was one mistake. I think that the next mistake that I made was I had this expectation that it was going to sell more books than actually did sell. Mm.
Yeah.
Now, I had a little bit of experience in self-publishing with my midwifery books and my herb books. And that was years before KDP or Kindle Direct Publishing. And so I did everything myself and sent it to the printer and paid for a bunch of books and had, you know, boxes of books and mailed them out myself. So that's how I did it, because that's how one did it back in the day.
Yeah.
So learning KDP was a little bit of a learning curve, but it's so much easier and so much better. But you do make a lot less money when you do it that way.
Yes, and you do.
The other thing that I didn't really take into consideration is how many novels are out there. Like, I write this in terms of this midwifery book, which is a specialized textbook for people who are practicing out of the hospital. So it's like this niche of a niche of a niche. So, you know, like I had to do very little marketing, very little anything, and just had the book out there and made, a set amount of money pretty consistently. And I had this expectation that the novel would do similarly, that I would, I made X number of dollars from the midwifery book. I thought I'd make X number of dollars from the novel. No. And so I did spend quite a lot of money on professional editing. Mm-hmm. And I am a big fan of professional editing. I mean, I don't think that that's anything that you can really cheap out on.
Not at all. As an editor, I say you can.
And so I looked at finding an editor was like finding a midwife. When I told my pregnant clients to go and find a midwife, I would always encourage them to interview multiple midwives. You know, find somebody that both have the professional experience that you wanted, and that you were going to feel safe with, but you also want to find somebody who you have a personal connection with.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I initially was looking for an Indigenous editor.
Oh.
Because, you know, that's sort of the theme of the book. And I actually even, you have to pay $30 to join the Indigenous Editors Association to even ask to have, you know, have your book in their newsletter to ask for an Indigenous author, editor.
I didn't know that the Indigenous Editor Association was a thing. So I'm actually going to share that link as well in the show notes for anybody who's interested, because that's really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. And I only got one reply, and the woman that replied, it didn't fit with both my budget and my timeline. And so when I look for professional editors, both developmental editors, I started with a developmental editor, and then I did a copy editor, a proofer, and I ended up doing a second round of proofing as well. And through all of that process, it was still in really rough shape. And I think part of the problem was, again, in this very first mistake of not learning, not only did I not learn any writing skills, like I learned after the fact, you never start a book with somebody waking up.
Yeah.
Well, my book, the first one, that's the first thing. Somebody's waking up. And so by the time I get to learn this, I'm so far into it, I decide I'm not going to change it. So, you know, that's just, you know, but that's the kind of thing, you know, that I did. I learned a lot, like, well, and part of the problem that I have, which is really unique with my book, because I have this lifetime experience of doing all of these things, permaculture, activism, herbs, midwifery, I wanted to include that kind of lifetime experience in there and use it as somewhat of a teaching model. Yeah. And then it ended up that because the editing was so expensive, I went to a nonprofit that I work with and decided that we would take on this project as a project. So they were able to help subsidize the editing costs. And of course, the hope was that it would make money back, you know, because it's a super small nonprofit. And I'm the person who grant writes, but I've been too busy writing books, so I haven't written any grants. And so we don't really, you know, it's not really a very money-making process. And that's but I also know that people who write in a really specific niche, like romanticy, whatever the trending thing is now, do much better than if you have this kind of obscure, you know, there's a very specific, I'm a big fan of the 1632 books, which is, Eric Flint. Yeah. And it's the concept of modern people going back in time and changing the future, which is different than a lot of time travel books. You can't change the future.
Yeah.
So, or it's one person who has a limited amount of things. So the idea of a group of people with a bunch of different skills coming to the past, making a significant, you know, that creates an alternative reality. And so it's really universe hopping more than time travel, because it branches off, and then there's a new universe. So but back to the editing, I don't think I necessarily made mistakes in the editors I chose. I did spend a lot of time. One of the things that I did do was do a 1,000-word sample where I sent a number of editors the 1,000 words and got them back. Because at one point, I went to Fiverr, which is a good place to find low-cost editors. A lot of times they're from a different country. So, they can, $500 pays for a lot more in Pakistan than it would somewhere else. And so many of them have good English skills. So I looked into that, and I found, I couldn't find an Indigenous person. And then I decided I wanted an American because it's, you know, American Indians, there's cultural things that people wouldn't necessarily understand. So I wanted American. My preference was a woman of color. So I found a woman of color and, you know, got a bid that was lower, but not tremendously lower than, you know, than the typical other editors that I got. And then I kind of picked her, and then I moved on because I was working on the book. And then I finally got to the point where I was ready to bite the bullet. And so at some point, after I finished the book, I got, I found some really great resources on Facebook. That was one of my best sources of information. There's a really active self-publishing group on Facebook, and they're super active and they were super helpful. And that's where I got the advice about the 1,000-word. Cause I didn't know, because I didn't really know anything about anything.
Yeah.
And so I sent this person that I'd picked out from Fiverr, this 1,000-word sample. And she sent me back something that was clearly, she threw it at AI and sent it back.
Ooh, and
it was so bad and so obviously AI. And I realized, you know, it wasn't even have word track changes. It was like so obviously, you know, so I was like, yeah, no. So then I had to go back to the drawing board and, you know, send out all these samples. And then I ended up finding, so a friend of mine also did one of the first edits. Did it for free, tremendous amount of work, found tons of errors. I did initially get like pro writing aid, found a whole lot of grammar errors, thought it was in good shape, got it back from her. Oh my God, my grammar, my writing. Terrible, terrible, terrible. So I enter all of these edits from her, and I still think it's in fairly good shape. Well, the professional, so because she had gone through it, I asked her to help me pick these editors. So she didn't know the cost of each one or who they were other than their names, and sent, I think I got about six of the 1,000-word samples. So I sent her all of her those, including the woman from the Indigenous, and sent them all to her. And she had come up with a recommendation, and I agreed with that, and it ended up being a white man from England. So it was totally different than
like
I had
very
wanted.
Different.
I wanted an American. I wanted a woman of color. No, it was a white English guy. And part of the reason why was how many errors they picked up and the comments that they made, you know, that made, you know, made sense. So I ended up going with him, and he was great. He wasn't, you know, it was not the most expensive, not the least expensive. He was sort of middle, you know, middle of the, you know, middle of the road. And then when, and then I did go to Fiverr for the lower cost proofers.
And so
I was less, although one of the proofers was a person of color, but that, and an American, but that didn't, that just, that's just the way that it worked out. But I would definitely, I think that, that while I spent a total of, and this is not all that unusual, about $6,000 on editing. Between the developmental editors, the copy editor, the proofers, that's now here's the reality. I've only sold to date 200 books.
Yeah.
Well, probably more than that. That was just my Amazon book. So I probably sold, I sell a fair amount when I go to personal events. So probably maybe 300. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and that does not cover the, the $6,000 that I spent on editing. And when I posted things like on that self-publishing Facebook group, people were like, oh, you're doing great. You sold a couple of hundred books. Mm-hmm. That's really awesome. I've sold 5, you know? And so I think that one mistake that people make is an unrealistic expectation of how much money they are going to make, and an unrealistic awareness of how much competition is out there in fiction books.
Yeah.
You know, I had that because I had this nonfiction super niche book, you know, that, you know, gave me a really unrealistic expectation. And then, you know, you always think, oh, my book is going to be so great, and it's so different than anybody else's book. I'm going to sell a ton of books. And, you know, it doesn't.
Yeah, that's definitely, I think, one of the biggest mistakes that people make, and I try and thwart early on, is this expectation level. You know, it's especially if you're self-publishing, there's an expectation that people don't entirely have, that there is a lot of work involved. You know, they think that there's not that much work, but there's a lot of work. You know, it's not just writing the book, it is project managing and production managing that book. You have to find people like industry experts, editors, cover artists, all of this stuff, and then also pay for that out of your own pocket. You know, it's, I think having that nonprofit background to help is pretty nice.
That's really made a huge difference. The book hadn't really come up, wouldn't have been possible without that, without that help. But one of the things that I did in my book, another mistake that I made, was the info dumping. And part of it was, and then, you know, part of it was caught by some of the developmental editor, you know, mentioned that. And I was kind of like, well, I'm really into, like, okay, I give this whole long thing of all the great properties of hemp. You know, hemp can do all of these great things. You know, it's not really critical to the story, but it's important to me that everybody knows that you can make plastic out of hemp, you know, and that, you know, they're growing hemp to do all, you know, to make fuel and to do all of these things, you know. Or I'll talk about, you know, plants or midwifery or, you know, other aspects of ideas I want to put out in the world, which involve info dumping. And it's not necessarily the best for a commercial book.
Yeah.
One of the other mistakes that I made was because I just wrote particularly the first book without taking any classes, knowing anything about action beats or, you know, scene structure or an outline, any of those things I did, you know, I made way too many characters. Every chapter is a point of view character, and I had way too many of them. So it's really hard for people to, I did do a cast of characters, but, you know, as a reader, I don't even like them very much, you know.
And here you are.
But that, you know, if I would have taken some more classes, then I would have learned some of the craft of writing. And that would have made the book better, the editing process better. But that was just, you know, another mistake I made.
Yeah. But the best part about making all these mistakes is the second book was a lot easier, wasn't it?
The second book was a lot easier, and the second book was a lot better. Yeah. It doesn't start with somebody waking up. And I have a few less characters. Yeah. You know, I, you know, just integrated them as an, as, you know, they're still part of the story, but less, you know, there's less point of view characters.
Yeah.
So in the third book, now I have to decide, you know, if I want to pare them down even more or how I want to do it. I haven't quite decided yet.
Yeah. What was the, just to kind of hop off for half a second, what was the editing process like with book two? Like, were there things that you found that were easier now that you'd had that experience from book one?
Oh, absolutely. Well, one of the things that I did do, after I got finished with the first book, I didn't realize that a self-published author has to spend as much time marketing as they do writing.
Yep.
And I didn't really get that before.
Yeah.
So I spent also way too much money on marketing. You know, I did, you know, lots and lots of different things and joined lots of different companies. And, you know, like the $20 a month, you know, adds up. However, one of the tricks that I did learn is that a lot of the people that sell writing classes, marketing classes, all of those things have a newsletter. And they put a lot of their tips and their tricks in the courses that they sell in their newsletters. So you can subscribe to a bunch of newsletters, and if you read them, you get a lot of the information that they would be selling, because they'll kind of excerpt their thing. So you can, you know, to promote buying their whole course, but you can get a lot of information from those. So the other marketing thing that I did was I started a BookTok account.
Oh.
And that took a lot of time because I didn't know anything about video editing, and I had to teach myself how to use CapCut and how to do video editing, and doing, you know, having a TikTok account and BookTok account was took a whole lot of time and effort. I don't know if it actually sold any books. Now, I did read that if you get a TikTok shop, some people sell a lot of their books through the TikTok shop. And and so I started setting up the TikTok shop, but for some reason or another, there was always some issue and I never completed the process.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that is the case where I would sell more books through the TikTok shop, because I never got the TikTok shop.
Yeah.
And then when I started my second book, just because the way my brain works, I have really bad ADHD, and how that manifests, if I start a project, I have to be really hyper focused.
Yeah.
So all I can do is that one thing. So all I can do is work on, you know, my book. So like after the first book, I spent probably 9 or 10 months just doing marketing. That's all I did, was marketing. And I did all of the different things. Then when I started the second book, I stopped all the marketing and just focused on the second book. And actually, one of the best marketing pieces of marketing advice I got, which was of course, like, you know, 7 or 8 months into this long, expensive, time-consuming process, of which didn't really do much, was to focus on the next book. The people who actually make money are people who have series. And, you know, or even if you don't have a consecutive series, you have a fan base of people who like your style or your reading or your genre or whatever.
Yeah.
So this ability to focus on the second book was, you know, I wish I would have in terms of a mistake, instead of spending all that time marketing, just focused on writing the second book. Or if I was the kind of person that could multitask really well, you know, spend an hour marketing every day and, you know,
yeah,
and then spend time working on the next book, you know, but my brain just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Oh, I'm the exact opposite where I do the multitasking. You know, I have such and such amount of time in the morning to work on this and then this in the afternoons. But that means that I lose that ability. Like, I don't have that ability to hyper-focus and get things done. So, yeah, I think advantages, disadvantages, right?
Yeah, there's always trade-offs no matter. Yeah. You have to figure out what works best for you.
Absolutely. Okay, so you talked about editing, you talked about marketing. What other mistakes?
Well, one of the other things, this is kind of goes in along with editing, was formatting.
Yes.
So when I did my midwifery book, I had learned InDesign, and I started years ago with PageMaker and gradually got up and you know, it's a pretty sophisticated program. But yeah. So I decided I was going to do my book in InDesign. And then I went back to InDesign and I started working with it and realized it had changed a lot because it had been, you know, 10 years and I was a little lost. So I decided, okay, I'm going to have to pay somebody to do that. So, yeah. You know, I paid again a whole bunch of money to somebody to format this book in InDesign. Well, that was a huge mistake. Because a novel does not need that. The novel, a novel can really be easily formatted in Word. You know, I'm not going to say it's not difficult because it can be very tricky. You know, like getting the pages right, you know, like I spent, because I did the formatting myself with Word on the second book. Mm-hmm. And it didn't cost me anything, but it did cost me a lot of time and frustration.
Yeah.
Of having to learn, you know, there's, you know, all kinds of weirdnesses with Word.
Sometimes. Oh, yeah. And then it's going to change it here in a couple of years and be a completely different menu. Yeah. I've been there.
So formatting was another mistake, but, you know, I ended up, tried to learn from the first book, you know, spending $6,000 on editing, formatting, all of that. I got it down to about half of that for the second book.
Hey.
So, on the other hand, I wish I would have had more money, and the nonprofit, you know, helped, but again, we don't have much money. So, I did end up going to kind of a lower cost editor than what I would have, like, I would have rather had gotten, not that he was, I thought he did a great job. And then I find out, oh no, there's all these other mistakes. There's, you know, it's kind of endless.
Yes. Always endless.
Yeah. So I wish I would have had the money to pay for a more, a little bit. I think in editing, you do get what you pay for.
Yes.
And a really good professional editor is going to cost, you know, especially if you have a, you know, my books are, you know, 65,000 words, you know, are going to be, a chunk of change.
Yes. Yeah. Now I've gotten some editing pitches for manuscripts, 250,000 words, and then they come back wondering why it's so expensive. I'm like, well, you know, let's cut back on a few words and it might be a little more affordable. Also, it doesn't need to be 250,000 words.
Oh, I didn't mean 65,000 words. I meant 165,000.
See, that's still reasonable, you know?
Yeah. You know, like they're 400 page, you know, novels.
Yeah.
When they come out. So, you know, it is fairly extensive. Mm-hmm. So, and here on terms of mistakes, again, I still would love to be able to afford to get the kind of editor that I, you know, that I would really, you know, really want. And also, and the same thing with developmental editors. One of the things that I got from going to Book Talk is I learned a lot from various different people on there. And there's some great content providers that are editors, that are authors, that are professional, and they give wonderful advice. And there is a particular developmental editor that I follow that gives incredible developmental advice. And I would be like, I went to her website and I was like, oh, I would really love to have this woman. She'd be so great. And if I wanted to spend, you know, her, you know, she's booked up for, you know, anybody that's really good is going to be booked up for a long time. Yeah. And, you know, to get on her schedule. And then if it's a series, she wants to read the previous book. So she has to, you know, you have to pay her her time to read the previous mm-hmm. novels. You know, it would be, you know, thousands of dollars to have the development, you know, a really good developmental editor.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not really possible.
No. Do you know what's her handle on TikTok?
C. Taylor.
C. Taylor.
C-E-E Taylor. Oh, she's phenomenal.
Yeah, I'll add her link in the show notes too so everybody can go give her a follow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Another really good one is Dietrich Stogner.
Dietrich, I'm going to guess at that spelling and then look it up and make sure I've got the right one later.
Both of those are really good. And then there's another woman, and she is an editor for one of the big publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And so she gives like really good advice. I'm trying to think of her name. I'll have to get it to you later. She gives really good advice, particularly if you're looking for how to write a query letter you know. And then she gives this really interesting advice where she also talks about TV shows. She's like, oh, this is the arc that these, you know, How I Met Your Mother,
yeah,
you know, went. And so mm-hmm. she gives these different scenarios in terms of the book structure based on screenplays, which is actually a really useful tool.
Oh yeah. I oftentimes when I'm doing coaching, I'll pull up either video clips or even reference movies or scenes because it's such a good tool. First off, I mean, it's script writing and then visual storytelling. It's the art of storytelling. There's so much you can learn from that. And then second off, having that visual aid, at least for me, it helps me a lot. I have to be able to see it for it to click for me.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
All right. What other mistakes? We'll spend maybe about 5 or 10 more minutes before we wrap. If you've got any other mistakes you want to chat about, or if you want have any mistakes that you thought you were glad that you made.
Well, I don't know about any mistakes I was glad that I made, but I made a couple of like really bad mistakes. One of which was, so after I did the first book, when I started writing the second book, I realized there was some things I wanted to change in the first book. Mm-hmm. Usually continuity things, or, you know, maybe some numbers, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then even though I had went through this editing process for the first book of all these multiple editors and multiple proofers, as the print version is floating around, people get them back to me and say, oh, you have this typo here or this grammar. And so there's still a bunch of mistakes mm-hmm. in the first book. So I decide, I have a big event in the summer that I do that is the Oregon Country Fair, and it's this huge festival. we have a booth there, and I wanted to get my, and I sell, you know, a few books there. And so I wanted to have my books ready for that. So mm-hmm. I pushed, I got the second book ready, and then I decided to go ahead and do a revamp of the first book.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I did in the second book, now remember that the book is about a whole group of people that go back in time and are changing things.
Yeah.
So in the second book, we had this idea of having as kind of in the back as like in a, like an extra section was newspaper articles that were written in the voice of newspapers from 1791.
Yeah.
I took a lot of research to read some of these newspapers because they have really weird spelling, really weird language. And they're basically saying, oh my God, there's all these people. They showed up. They have horseless carriages. They have, you know, lights that go on. You know, they're created this country with, you know, free Negroes and they've got a woman who's an Indian, who's the, you know, the president of their country, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I had these really cool newspaper articles that was written from that perspective. And yeah. I decided, oh, in the first book, I should have done that too. But one of the nice things about KDP is you can add stuff. You can change it.
Yep.
So I made some articles, changed it, then, you know, fixed a bunch of the typos, changed the art around in the first book.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in this hurry because I'm trying to get these books, you know, the author copies in time for this festival.
Yeah.
Well, in the process of, because I had somebody who was working on it, I didn't do, I had him work on a separate thing and I cut and paste each individual chapter in
mm-hmm.
because I didn't want to mess up my formatting. Well, you know how sometimes you have something in, you know, you copy something and you think it's copied and you paste it and it's not
yep.
the old thing.
Uh-huh. Well,
I copied a whole chapter, pasted it in, and thought it was fine. Printed uh-huh. a bunch of author copies.
Oh, no.
Went to, you know, oh, I went to Worldcon with these copies.
Mm-hmm.
With that had, and then I get this email from somebody
oh, no.
that says, oh, did you know that chapter 30 is the exact same thing as chapter 29? And I'm like, oh, no.
That sucks.
Yeah. So, so I ended up doing like an insert, a printed yeah. insert, and sticking them in the, you know, in the 25 copies that I took to Worldcon. And then wow. I changed, but a few people who bought it, you know,
yep.
in that time period, totally missed out. So I think that was another mistake I made. But every mistake that I made
mm-hmm.
in the process all had to do with being rushed.
Yeah.
Not having, you know, like I have, for one thing, the way I work is I like having deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I give myself this deadline. I rush through it. I totally focus on it, get it done. And that's just the way that I've always, you know, worked being a procrastinator. You know, I just yeah. always had to have deadlines. And when you're working on something like a book where you don't have an exterior deadline, it's harder.
Yes, it is. So,
because I have these events that I'm trying to get stuff done,
mm-hmm.
then I have these deadlines that are not necessarily self-imposed. And that's when I've made mistakes.
Yeah.
Is rushing through, you know, like I would say if, you know, taking more time, you know, for every step in the process.
Yes.
You know, like I mentioned before, like with the editing, I thought I had an editor, then they fell through at the last minute. So then I was rushed in finding yeah. somebody.
Oh gosh. Yeah. No, I think just taking the time, and I liked your comment about, you know, setting those deadlines, even if you're having to set them for yourself, you know, it's just, that's crucial.
Yeah.
Okay. So wrapping up, is there one last piece of advice that you would share, or one big mistake that you want to quickly talk about before we sign off?
Getting reviews. That's you know, that's really hard. And the way the algorithm at Amazon works is you need to have 50 reviews and pre-orders the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
If you don't have that, your book is pretty much sunk.
Yeah.
And I didn't really have any pre-orders. I didn't really set myself up for pre-orders for the first book. And then, you know, I didn't get very many reviews. Still haven't gotten very many reviews. The second book, I did get a lot more pre-orders, and that helped because I had, you know, people who read the first book.
Yeah.
And if they get them from Amazon, then Amazon, you know, pushes the second one. But I still haven't gotten the reviews for the second book. Mm-hmm. And again, the sales really reflect that.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is quite a lot of Facebook groups where they have review trains, you know, there, and there's lots of resources in order to get reviews. So I think that that's, you know, that's the thing that I've made.
That's, I think, something that we often forget about when, especially when you're self-publishing, is that the reviews and the pre-orders are just as important.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Daphne, for joining us. I'm going to put up the link again for if you want to buy her book, which I will, because that sounds awesome. It sounds really cool. Thanks. And I'll make sure to leave a review. So if anybody does purchase a book and read it, please leave a review.
Because those are wonderful.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank you so much, Daphne. This was such a pleasure. And yeah, thanks for joining us.
Great.
Daphne was such a treat to have on, and I hope to bring her back on again soon. I hope you got a lot of really good information from all of the mistakes that she has made, and hopefully you now have the tools and knowledge to go forth and not make some of those mistakes in your own self-publishing journey. All of the links from everything that she talked about is in the show notes, so if you want to first off purchase her book or check out book two or leave her a review, wink wink, nudge nudge, you can find the links to all of that in the show notes. And also, if you want to join our Discord, where we have tons of industry experts in there, as well as a crap ton of other writers who are just in the same boat with you, and you don't have to do all of this alone, please join our Discord. That link is also in the show notes. Anyway, I will see you all next week. Thanks, friends. Bye.